The legs of men will lag on a rough road, while a dwarf goes on. Be the burden twice his own weight, Master Boromir.
The task proved hard indeed, yet in the end it was done. The goods were taken out of the boats and brought to the top of the bank, where there was a level space. Then the boats were drawn out of the water and carried up. They were far less heavy than any had expected. Of what tree growing in the elvish country they were made, not even Legolas knew. But the wood was tough and yet strangely light. Merry and Pippin alone could carry their boat with ease along the flat. Nonetheless, it needed the strength of the two men to lift and haul them over the ground that the company now had to cross. It sloped up away from the river, a tumbled waste of grey limestone boulders, with many hidden holes shrouded with weeds and bushes. There were thickets of brambles and sheer dells, and here and there boggy pools fed by waters trickling from the terraces further inland. One by one, Boromir and Aragorn carried the boats, while the others toiled and scrambled after them with a baggage. At last all was removed and laid on the portageway. Then, with little further hindrance, save from sprawling briars and many fallen stones, they moved forward all together. Fog still hung in veils upon the crumbling rock wall, and to their left mist shrouded the river. They could hear it rushing and foaming over the sharp shelves and stony teeth of San Gebir, but they could not see it. Twice they made the journey before all was brought safe to the southern landing. There the portage way, turning back to the waterside, ran gently down to the shallow edge of a little pool. It seemed to have been scooped in the riverside, not by hand, but by the water swirling down from San Gebir against a low pier of rock that jutted out some way into the stream. Beyond it the shore rose sheer into a grey cliff, and there was no further passage for those on foot. Already the short afternoon was past, and a dim, cloudy dusk was closing in. They sat beside the water, listening to the confused rush and roar of the rapids hidden in the mist. They were tired and sleepy, and their hearts were as gloomy as the dying day.
"Well, here we are, and here we must pass another night," said Boromir. "We need sleep, and even if Aragorn had a mind to pass the gates of Argonath by night, we're all too tired, except, no doubt, our sturdy dwarf." Gimli made no reply. He was nodding as he sat. "Let us rest as much as we can now," said Aragorn. "Tomorrow we must journey by day again. Unless the weather changes once more and cheats us, we shall have a good chance of slipping through, unseen by any eyes on the eastern shore. But tonight two must watch together in turns, 3 hours off and one on guard."
Nothing happened that night worse than a brief drizzle of rain an hour before dawn. As soon as it was fully light, they started. Already the fog was thinning. They kept as close as they could to the western side, and they could see the dim shapes of the low cliffs rising ever higher, shadowy walls with their feet in the hurrying river. In the mid-morning the clouds drew down lower, and it began to rain heavily. They drew the skin covers over their boats to prevent them from being flooded and drifted on. Little could be seen before them or about them through the grey falling curtains. The rain, however, did not last long. Slowly the sky above grew lighter, and then suddenly the clouds broke, and their draggled fringes trailed away northward up the river. The fogs and mists were gone. Before the travellers lay a wide ravine, with great rocky sides to which clung, upon shelves and in narrow crevices, a few thorn trees. The channel grew narrower and the river swifter. Now they were speeding along with little hopes of stopping or turning, whatever they might meet ahead. Over them was a lane of pale blue sky, around them the dark, overshadowed river, and before them, black, shutting out the sun, the hills of Emin Muil, in which no opening could be seen. Frodo, peering forward, saw in the distance two great rocks approaching. Like great pinnacles or pillars of stone they seemed. Tall and sheer and ominous, they stood upon either side of the stream. A narrow gap appeared between them, and the river swept the boats towards it.
"Behold the Argonath, the pillars of the kings," cried Aragorn. "We shall pass them soon. Keep the boats in line, and as far apart as you can. Hold the middle of the stream."
As Frodo was borne towards them, the great pillars rose like towers to meet them. Giants they seemed to him, vast grey figures, silent but threatening. Then he saw that they were indeed shaped and fashioned. The craft and power of old had wrought upon them, and still they preserved through the suns and rains of forgotten years the mighty likenesses in which they had been hewn. Upon great pedestals founded in the deep waters stood two great kings of stone. Still with blurred eyes and crannied brows they frowned upon the north. The left hand of each was raised palm outwards in gesture of warning. In each right hand there was an axe. Upon each head there was a crumbling helm and crown. Great power and majesty they still wore, the silent wardens of a long-vanished kingdom. Awe and fear fell upon Frodo, and he cowered down, shutting his eyes and not daring to look up as the boat drew near. Even Boromir bowed his head as the boats whirled by, frail and fleeting as little leaves under the enduring shadow of the sentinels of Numenor. So they passed into the dark chasm of the gates. Sheer rose the dreadful cliffs to unguessed heights on either side. Far off was the dim sky. The black waters roared and echoed, and a wind screamed over them. Frodo, crouching over his knees, heard Sam in front muttering and groaning. "What a place! What a horrible place! Let me get out of this boat, and I'll never wet my toes in a puddle again, let alone a river."
"Fear not," said a strange voice behind him.
Frodo turned and saw Strider, and yet not Strider, for the weather-worn ranger was no longer there. In the stern sat Aragorn, son of Arathorn, proud and erect, guiding the boat with skillful strokes. His hood was cast back, and his dark hair was blowing in the wind. A light was in his eyes, a king returning from exile to his own land.
"Fear not," he said. "Long have I desired to look upon the likenesses of Isildur and Anarion, my sires of old.
Under their shadow, Elessar, the Elfstone son of Arathorn of the house of Valandil, Isildur's son, heir of Elendil, has naught to dread." Then the light of his eyes faded, and he spoke to himself.
"Would that Gandalf were here. How my heart yearns for Minas Anor and the walls of my own city. But whither now shall I go?"
The chasm was long and dark, and filled with a noise of wind and rushing water and echoing stone. It bent somewhat towards the west, so that at first all was dark ahead. But soon Frodo saw a tall gap of light before him, ever growing. Swiftly it drew near, and suddenly the boat shot through, out into a wide, clear light. The sun, already long fallen from the noon, was shining in a windy sky. The pent water spread out into a long oval lake, pale Nen Hithoil, fenced by steep grey hills whose sides were clad with trees, but their heads were bare, cold gleaming in the sunlight. At the far southern end rose three peaks. The midmost stood somewhat forward from the others and sundered from them, an island in the waters, about which the flowing river flung pale, shimmering arms. Distant but deep, there came up on the wind a roaring sound like the roll of thunder heard far away.
"Behold, Tall Brandir," said Aragorn, pointing south to the tall peak. "Upon the left stands Armon Hoar, and upon the right is Armon Hen, the hills of hearing and of sight. In the days of the great kings, there were high seats upon them, and watch was kept there. But it is said that no foot of man or beast has ever been set upon Tall Brandir. Ere the shade of night falls, we shall come to them. I hear the endless voice of Raros calling."
The company rested now for a while, drifting south on the current that flowed through the middle of the lake. They ate some food, and then they took to their paddles and hastened on their way. The sides of the westward hills fell into shadow, and the sun grew round and red. Here and there a misty star peered out. The three peaks loomed before them, darkling in the twilight. Rauros was roaring with a great voice. Already night was laid on the flowing waters when the travellers came at last under the shadow of the hills. The 10th day of their journey was over. Wilderland was behind them. They could go no further without choice between the east way and the west. The last stage of the quest was before them. Chapter 10. The Breaking of the Fellowship. Aragorn led them to the right arm of the river. Here upon its western side, under the shadow of Tol Brandir, a green lawn ran down to the water from the feet of Armon Hen. Behind it rose the first gentle slopes of the hill clad with trees, and trees marched away westward along the curving shores of the lake. A little spring fell tumbling down and fed the grass.
"Here we will rest tonight," said Aragorn. "This is the lawn of Parth Garlan, a fair place in the summer days of old. Let us hope that no evil has yet come here." They drew up their boats on the green banks, and beside them they made their camp. They set a watch, but had no sight nor sound of their enemies. If Gollum had contrived to follow them, he remained unseen and unheard. Nonetheless, as the night wore on, Aragorn grew uneasy, tossing often in his sleep and waking. In the small hours he got up and came to Frodo, whose turn it was to watch.
"Why are you waking?" asked Frodo. "It is not your watch."
"I don't know," answered Aragorn, "but a shadow and a threat has been growing in my sleep. It would be well to draw your sword."
"Why?" said Frodo. "Are enemies at hand?"
"Let us see what sting may show," answered Aragorn.
Frodo then drew the elf blade from its sheath. To his dismay, the edges gleamed dimly in the night. "Orcs," he said. "Not very near, and yet too near, it seems."
"I feared as much," said Aragorn. "But maybe they are not on this side of the river. The light of Sting is faint, and it may point to no more than spies of Mordor roaming on the slopes of Armon Hlor. I have never heard before of orcs upon Armon Hen. Yet who knows what may happen in these evil days, now that Minas Tirith no longer holds secure the passages of Anduin. We must go warily tomorrow."
The day came like fire and smoke. Low in the east, there were black bars of cloud like the fumes of a great burning. The rising sun lit them from beneath with flames of murky red, but soon it climbed above them into a clear sky. The summit of Tol Brandir was tipped with gold. Frodo looked out eastward and gazed at the tall island. Its sides sprang sheer out of the running water. High up above the tall cliffs were steep slopes upon which trees climbed, mounting one head above another, and above them again were grey faces of inaccessible rock, crowned by a great spire of stone. Many birds were circling about it, but no sign of other living things could be seen. When they had eaten, Aragorn called the company together.
"The day has come at last," he said, "the day of choice, which we have long delayed. What shall now become of our company that has travelled so far in fellowship? Shall we turn west with Boromir and go to the wars of Gondor, or turn east to the fear and shadow? Or shall we break up our fellowship and go this way and that, as each may choose? Whatever we do must be done soon. We cannot long halt here. The enemy is on the eastern shore, we know, but I fear that the orcs may already be on this side of the water." There was a long silence in which no one spoke or moved. "Well, Frodo," said Aragorn at last, "I fear that the burden is laid upon you. You are the bearer appointed by the council. Your own way you alone can choose. In this matter I cannot advise you. I am not Gandalf, and though I have tried to bear his part, I do not know what design or hope he had for this hour, if indeed he had any. Most likely it seems that if he were here now, the choice would still wait on you. Such is your fate." Frodo didn't answer at once. Then he spoke slowly. "I know that haste is needed, yet I cannot choose.
The burden is heavy. Give me an hour longer, and I will speak. Let me be alone. Aragorn looked at him with kindly pity.
Very well, Frodo, son of Drogo, he said. You shall have an hour, and you shall be alone. We will stay here for a while, but do not stray far or out of call.
Frodo sat for a moment with his head bowed. Sam, who had been watching his master with great concern, shook his head and muttered,
Plain as a pikestaff it is, but it's no good Sam Gamgee putting in his spoke just now.
Presently Frodo got up and walked away, and Sam saw that while the others restrained themselves and did not stare at him, the eyes of Boromir followed Frodo intently until he passed out of sight in the trees at the foot of Arwen Hen. Wandering aimlessly at first in the wood, Frodo found that his feet were leading him up towards the slopes of the hill. He came to a path, the dwindling ruins of a road of long ago. In steep places, stairs of stone had been hewn, but now they were cracked and worn, and split by the roots of trees. For some while he climbed, not caring which way he went, until he came to a grassy place. Rowan trees grew about it, and in the midst was a wide flat stone. The little upland lawn was open upon the east, and was filled now with the early sunlight. Frodo halted and looked out over the river, far below him, to Tol Brandir and the birds wheeling in the great gulf of air between him and the untrodden isle. The voice of Rauros was a mighty roaring mingled with a deep throbbing boom. He sat down upon the stone and cupped his chin in his hands, staring eastwards but seeing little with his eyes. All that had happened since Bilbo left the Shire was passing through his mind, and he recalled and pondered everything that he could remember of Gandalf's words. Time went on, and still he was no nearer to a choice. Suddenly he awoke from his thoughts. A strange feeling came to him that something was behind him, that had friendly eyes were upon him. He sprang up and turned, but all that he saw to his surprise was Boromir, and his face was smiling and kind.
I was afraid for you, Frodo, he said, coming forward. If Aragorn is right and orcs are near, then none of us should wander alone, and you least of all. So much depends on you. And my heart, too, is heavy. May I stay now and talk for a while, since I've found you? It would comfort me. Where there are so many, all speech becomes a debate without end, but two together may perhaps find wisdom.
You are kind, answered Frodo, but I don't think that any speech will help, for I know what I should do, but I'm afraid of doing it, Boromir. Afraid. Boromir stood silent. Rauros roared endlessly on. The wind murmured in the branches of the trees. Frodo shivered. Suddenly Boromir came and sat beside him.
Are you sure that you do not suffer needlessly? He said. I wish to help you. You need counsel in your hard choice. Will you not take mine?
I think I know already what counsel you would give, Boromir, said Frodo. And it would seem like wisdom, but for the warning of my heart.
Warning? Warning against what?
Said Boromir sharply. Against delay. Against the way that seems easier. Against refusal of the burden that is laid on me. Against, well, if it must be said, against trust in the strength and truth of men.
Yet that strength has long protected you far away in your little country, though you knew it not.
I don't doubt the valor of your people, but the world is changing. The walls of Minas Tirith may be strong, but they are not strong enough. If they fail, what then?
We shall fall in battle valiantly, but there is still hope that they will not fail.
No hope while the ring lasts, said Frodo.
Ah, the ring, said Boromir, his eyes lighting. The ring, is it not a strange fate that we should suffer so much fear and doubt for so small a thing? So small a thing! And I have seen it only for an instant in the House of Elrond. Could I not have a sight of it again?
Frodo looked up. His heart went suddenly cold. He caught the strange gleam in Boromir's eyes, yet his face was still kindly and friendly. It is best that it should lie